Hi, and welcome to the Inclusive Workplace podcast. I'm Ursula Tavender, and I'm so happy that you're here with us as we tell the stories of how organisations are navigating the most pressing inclusion issues. Thank you for being here. Hello and a warm welcome back to the Inclusive Workplace podcast. I'm Ursula Tavender, one of the co-founders of the Inclusive Workplace, and we've got an absolute corker of a conversation for you today. I'm joined by Ritika, and Ritika, thank you so much for joining us today. Can you tell us, first of all, tell us about yourself?
But first of all, I want to say thank you for being here.
thank you for joining us.
Thank you for giving me the opportunity to be here because, I absolutely love what you do. And also, of course, I love you because you're just a phenomenal human being. My absolute pleasure to be on this podcast, to be asked to be here because of the work that you're doing and the change you're trying to make through conversations like these. So thank you from me. And yes, I'm Ritika Wadhwa. I am currently the CEO and founder of Prabhav Global. Prabhav means impact in Hindi. And as I launched my business, I wanted to do it for nothing else but impact. So the tagline of Prabhav Global is using the transformative power of cultural intelligence for impactful leadership. In a nutshell. I also sit on the strategic advisory board for British Transport Police. I am a trustee at the 5% Club. I am a leadership fellow at Windsor Castle and loads of other voluntary positions, which we can go into, but perhaps let's dig in with the rest, Ursula.
Thank you so much. And I think that's something that we really bonded over when we first met a long time ago now, is the sense that impact is such a priority for our organization as it is for you, Ritika. And it feels in a way like we're kindred spirits to me because, you know, the change that we're all working towards in our different ways is what sits at the forefront of everything that we do. So it's an absolute joy to have this conversation with you and to be inspired by you. Very grateful that you're joining us today. Thank you. You know, I wanted to start this conversation with a question about cultural intelligence, because I realized last year when you joined us at Flexpo that so many people are still not familiar with the term cultural intelligence. So could you please explain how cultural intelligence is different from emotional intelligence, first of all, please?
Absolutely. So cultural intelligence is a form of intelligence very much like IQ and EQ. So those are the three forms of intelligence. And what makes it an intelligence is when you can measure it. Anything else is cultural awareness or anything else you might want to call it, but it's an intelligence because you can actually measure it. And what you measure is the capability to work with people that are different from us. The capability, the skill to actually thrive in diverse or multicultural environments. So cultural intelligence, very much like emotional intelligence, is formed of four capabilities, just like emotional intelligence. The four capabilities of cultural intelligence are CQ drive, CQ knowledge, CQ strategy, and CQ action. Now, what makes a difference from emotional intelligence is that, of course, emotional intelligence is needed by leaders to be successful and effective. However, CQ takes off from where EQ leaves us. And what I mean by that is a very simple example would be when I'm working with people that are just like me, I'm able to read their verbal and non-verbal cues more easily, let's say. So if someone is speaking to me at a higher decibel than what I'm used to, I might construe it from my own cultural upbringing and lens and think they're being rude or aggressive. Yeah. Whereas maybe in their culture, that's how they speak. So what emotional intelligence does is helps us become aware of our emotions and emotions of those around us. But then that's from our own lens. cultural intelligence adds that layer of understanding those emotions and differences around us from a cultural lens. And so, you know, a really good example that I give during my workshops is when I traveled to Greece with my now husband, and he introduced me to his family. As soon as the introduction happened, everyone started talking pretty animatedly to each other. The decibel levels started going up. I could see that their faces started to become redder than what they were. Now, at that point, I didn't understand Greek at all. Thankfully, now I do. And so my emotional intelligence kicked in. And I thought, okay, this isn't going well. They're angry about something. They're really upset about being introduced to me or whatever it is. This isn't going well. Cut a long story short, what it was is all of them discussing animatedly which restaurant to take me to. Right? For them, food is so food is so important. Mm-hmm. And how you know, it was a discussion about their favorite restaurants and which might work well for me. And again, if you see that as an example, my emotional intelligence took me that far. However, if I understood the culture, or it's not possible for us to understand every culture, cultural intelligence helps us come from a place of curiosity rather than judgment in a situation that is unfamiliar to us. And that's how CQ takes off from where EQ leaves us.
I feel like there's 100 questions that might spin off from that intro. Thank you so much. So thinking about the link with diversity, equity, and inclusion then for organizations, thinking about the types of people that will be listening to this conversation, is there a strategic link between cultural intelligence and D&I?
Let me ask you a question then. Okay. Do you think diversity leads to innovation?
Yes.
Okay.
Not on its own, but yes.
Well, that's the response I typically get. Okay, it's half a question, but that's typically the response I get when I speak to senior leaders across organizations, that diversity should lead to innovation. But what research in this field, specifically around cultural intelligence, tells us is that actually homogeneous teams outperform diverse teams when cultural intelligence is missing.
Okay.
Yeah. So what it's basically saying is that, again, very much like emotional intelligence, it's easier for us to work with people like us. So mm-hmm. we hire people that look like us. We end up forming those echo chambers because it's just easier, right? So what that means is because it's taking away that relationship conflict that can come with working with differences or what's not comfortable for us, what it does is productivity is at a good pace. Creativity, innovation is at a good, acceptable pace. Now, if you throw in diversity into that homogenous team, it's actually more difficult for them to work with each other because you've got to work harder to understand, to even acknowledge or accept very unique perspectives to what your cultural lens is or what your upbringing is or what your opinion or thought process is. To be challenged on that is not easy, especially if you're, you know, working in a hierarchical organization and the boss is challenging, you know, depending on the, which culture you're working in.
Yeah.
So it's easier. And what that means is that obviously productivity innovation is high. However, when you throw diversity into the mix and teach people, it's a skill that can be learned. Teach people to work with each other, to be productive with each other, to take away that relationship conflict so that we are left with the task conflict, that's when productivity and innovation hits the roof. No homogenous team can come close to a diverse team that knows how to work with each other. And that's the strategic link between DEI and CQ, because very much embedding CQ is a leadership skill that embeds itself in the D&I work, because ultimately what it does is helps us come from a place of curiosity, helps us come from a place of empathy, helps us come from a place of understanding our motivation to work with people that are different from us. So the outcome, the natural outcome of a culturally intelligent individual, team, and organization is inclusion, is belonging, is productivity, is innovation. And that is really where the strategic link for DEI and CQ sits.
Brilliant. Thank you so much. I think one of the things that comes up really frequently for us when we are within organizations working on projects, particularly. I'm thinking of examples around embedding flexible working. The cross-cultural conversation comes up particularly in global organizations. And many of the organizations that within the inclusive workplace community are global, with workforces and teams that are collaborating across countries and continents, right? So what they tell us is that those differences are bridges that are difficult, gaps that are difficult to bridge, because there is a lack of understanding across those cross-cultural teams around ways of working, and that presents challenges for those organizations and those teams, and it makes it less possible for them to work in ways that they would prefer to work in, because their boss might be based in a different country and, you know, they don't have the same sort of flexible culture that within that part of the business as exists in the UK. So when it isn't possible for teams working across those bridges to immerse themselves in the experience of the team members that are not in the same place as them, how would you recommend that those teams can go about developing their CQ?
Great question. So before we get into that, the details of the answer, I want to do a little bit of digging around the concept of culture.
Mm-hmm.
So culture, from a cultural intelligence notion or that body of work, is way beyond nationality. So culture is everything that we are. It's our gender, it's our ethnicity, nationality, the food we eat, the people who are our friends, the customs we follow, the faith that we have or not. So all of that that makes us who we are is our culture. And obviously nationality is a part of it. Where we are brought up and how we are brought up plays a huge part in who we become and what we take to the workplace. Now, in a lot of situations, those that especially coming from underrepresented, marginalized communities mask it or code switch it, which mm-hmm. is not ideal, again, from an inclusive culture, right? So culture from a cultural intelligence cultural intelligence notion is then also looked at as domestic diversity and global diversity.
Mm-hmm.
So even if you're all brought up in the same country and we're all British, the way I'm brought up might be very different from the way you're brought up, even if we live on the same street. So that would be domestic diversity. And there's a whole notion and body of work around that. Then there's obviously the global diversity that we are discussing right now in this question. What does it mean for teams based internationally and how they work together? A challenge I would throw back to that really is, when you talk about flexible working, do we understand what that really means?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and for who, and who defines that? So that's the challenge. I say that I'm providing, as a leader, I'm providing flexible working policies for my teams. But really, who is defining those policies and for who?
Yeah.
So making sure that flexible working, and you call yourself as a flexible organization an organization that works flexibly, whose voice have you taken into consideration when you speak about that? And I say that because, again, a lot of the policies and procedures will come from dominant groups or the West, the UK, US, etc., right? But then do they really translate well for other parts of the world in the way that it does for us here, right? And so even digging into that basics, or what does that really mean, and making sure you have everybody's voice on the table when defining those policies, procedures, and what that looks like. And you know, when we say about cultural intelligence, actually one of the myths around that is that those that have traveled extensively are naturally culturally intelligent. No, because just because you've got on a plane and gone to another country, that doesn't mean that you've immersed yourself in the discomfort that might come in being in situations, yeah. Right? So yeah. I could have never got on a plane, and I could be living in a village somewhere, but I could be much more culturally intelligent than the person who goes business class, stays in the same hotel, eats the food that they are comfortable with, and flies back. So from a cultural perspective, you don't have to be in the shoes of someone else, or go to another country, or meet someone else physically to understand what they're about, or have some level of empathy, or really think that you're culturally intelligent. What cultural intelligence says and does is that find out very specifically what outcome, if I use this as an example, what outcome you want from this interaction and meeting, then really what knowledge do you have about the people that you interact with most in how they are similar or different from you? And those knowledge sources are everywhere, books, podcasts, movies, I mean, name it. There is no excuse for not knowing, because knowledge is the one thing that we have access to more than ever before. Mm-hmm. So that knowledge is where you hone in on what do I know about the cultures that I'm interacting, what's similar, what's different. And then how am I using that knowledge to interact in a way that I can get the outcome I want? So cultural intelligence is making you, is forcing you to do something with that knowledge, unlike a lot of other trainings that or skill development that we go through, where cultural awareness, you know it, okay, off you go. CQ strategy is the part where you're flexing, you're adapting, you're planning, and using that knowledge that you have. Where, for example, you might say, okay, I don't know, a stereotype that we might have about a generation, all 60 plus people are stuck in the dark ages and don't understand tech. That's a bias. However, what culture, so that might be the knowledge part, but cultural intelligence will help us interact with the individual in front of us and take away, make us realize of the bias that we're having and take that away there and then, so that we can interact with the individual for the outcome we want as they are, rather than what their stereotype is. Yeah. And last, the action. How are you actually adapting? And this is the part where no matter which country you're based in, and you know, how often you interact with, like, how do you adapt for the outcome that you want from that interaction? And that's your CQ action in action. So I hope I've answered that question, when it doesn't really matter where you're based physically, especially in the world that we're operating in right now. And you can still have that interaction in a very culturally intelligent way if you focus to do that and want to do that, and see that the outcome from that is what you can possibly work towards.
I think, you know, what I kind of hear loud and clear in what you're saying is a word you mentioned right at the beginning, which is curiosity, because when we approach conversations with curiosity rather than assumptions and judgment and bias, we open up the possibilities, don't we, and open up our minds to learning and growth and all of those great things that come from just that one difference in the approach. And I think that I've seen that so many times with the work that we do, that is the fundamental difference. And I see that with the international teams and the global teams, is when there is a kind of, this is the way we do it. So, you know, if you want to fit into that, fine. If you don't, then that's going to be awkward. And that's, it's that sort of closed-mindedness, which is the barrier ultimately to that growth, isn't it, and to that learning.
So from that perspective, especially for international teams, it's the cultural values that come to the fore. So the work that we do within the cultural intelligence framework is the CQ knowledge and the 10 cultural values that make us who we are, that don't really change.
Okay.
so for example, especially in the international context, the West is low power distance and the East is high power distance. Okay, like if we use that as an example, what does that mean for when I'm working in an office in Amsterdam? I walk in wearing a pair of shorts on a bicycle, don't really care who the boss in the room is, don't care who the decision maker is, everyone's equal, I'm okay to challenge, speak up, etc. Mm-hmm. And that is rewarded, that is looked at as a pathway to success, etc. Mm-hmm. Right now, throw someone from Mexico or India in that room, or China in that room, and actually you think you're doing them a favor, but you're not, because they are genuinely not comfortable with not knowing who the boss in the room is. Mm-hmm. So you're not getting the best out of that individual or employee by throwing them into a context that you think works for you, right? And so you've got to understand those dynamics, because the world isn't any more about one size fits all, or that this is my way or the highway. It's not going to work, because if you don't do it, your competition will make an effort to understand it. If you don't do it, your competition and your clients will understand, how can I approach this from a culturally intelligent way? By understanding how hierarchy works for this individual, by understanding whether they're a direct or indirect communicator, by understanding whether they come from an individualistic or collectivist mindset. And this isn't, again, a one size fit all, because what it means that even if you are born and brought up in Britain, you could still be a collectivist. I'm working with a lot of organizations that are very collectivist in Britain. But what does that mean for accountability? So many layers to this. But the point of all of this is that how much can we really understand each other at an individual level so that we can both come halfway, and it doesn't become the responsibility of those not from the dominant group to have to compromise. And the more and more we're actually having people from the emerging economies like India, China, Brazil, etc., that are moving to the US, to the UK, to Canada, to Australia to take on leadership roles.
Mm-hmm.
How are we equipping those they're working with here to work productively with each other rather than it being their responsibility to do it? So what this work does is bring everybody to that halfway point to go, this is what I need to do to make it a collaborative, relatively effortless interaction. And this is what I need. So it has to be everyone's responsibility. And that's what CQ knowledge and the cultural intelligence framework helps us very actively do.
Brilliant. I feel like I could talk to you about that bit all day. Because I think it's something that is beneficial to everyone, isn't it?
Uh-huh.
Particularly, lots of the leaders that we work with. So next I'd like to talk to you about the division that we're seeing in the world at the moment, particularly because of faith or values or myriad of reasons that drive division and divisiveness. I'd really love to hear your perspectives on how CQ can help support that and close those gaps.
Yeah, I could go on about this one because there's so many reasons, obviously, as you said, that division is happening around us, unfortunately, but it is a fact. And it is a fact because, again, the way we were brought up and the information that we were fed growing up, and the media, what that did to our brain cells and knowledge and how we formed our opinions, the people that we became friends with, the religion that we follow and how we feel about how that grounds us and how that might be the only way for us to operate in the nuances of the world around us. So there's lots of reasons, and there's obviously also the power structures in place, right? So I don't want to give up my seat at the table. This is my land. This is my way of thinking. This is my way of doing. This is the only way that is the right way of doing it, because why would I be okay to let go of my position of power and privilege to make space for you? Because that's against human nature. That's against the way our survival works. However, that understanding that it is not 10 people around the table, and that's that, the fact that the table isn't limited, table can be expanded, and you're not actually giving up your space, you're just making more space on the table. That is such a difficult concept to grasp and work with for most humans, and naturally so. So the thing that we mentioned and talked about earlier is that cultural intelligence, the one thing it really helps us do is come from a place of curiosity rather than judgment. And when we open up our eyes to the world around us, even from the small facet of a car that isn't parked in a way that you would park it, let's step back for a second before coming to a judgment about why this is, to go, okay, there might be other reasons. This person might be in a rush, maybe everybody else was parked like that, and does this car is now parked like that and everyone else is left. It's that notion of there's more than one right answer.
Mm-hmm.
And what cultural intelligence really helps us do in that moment, especially CQ strategies, and I have the knowledge and I have amassed and read as much as possible, but in that moment, I'm treating the individual for who they are and communicating with that individual as a human being. And that sort of takes away a whole load of barriers and helps us work from a place of humanity rather than process and policy. And I'm thinking that really is, there is no silver bullet.
No.
There is, because we've been fighting for our right to exist, some more compared to the others, for millennia.
Yeah.
And so is there a right answer? But I think one conversation at a time, and that's where, you know, that's where I founded the business, around moving from intent to impact, about having those conversations with organizations, with senior leaders who are in the position of power and privilege, to go, okay, how can we make the world a better place around us through each conversation and one behavior at a time? Yeah, I hope I've answered the question in a nutshell through that. It's a very difficult one to have a silver bullet answer for.
There isn't. I can't see that there is one, but that is a beautiful way to frame that question and to pique some curiosity in the people listening to this, to think about how they might be able to go about addressing those divisions. And I think that what I couldn't help but think was how beneficial it would be for every child to learn about this framework in as part of their education. You know, I remember growing up in a family where there was so much judgment of others, and, you know, I've spent my entire adult life working on that and trying to be compassionate to myself about, you know, biases that were given to me, but on the understanding that I always felt innately that was wrong, and that there were other perspectives, and I'm not sure where that originally came from, but it's always been there in me. And yeah, just that understanding that everybody is deserving of understanding and meeting them where they are. And I just feel like, I mean, does that happen? Does cultural intelligence, is it taught in schools? Or is it just in organizations?
In education, within the higher education, for sure. Not so much primary schools that I'm aware of. But it's one of those things that's calling me for a long time as well, to go into primary schools and educate the teachers, or even secondary schools. So I spoke at the Future Leaders program recently, which was a room full of about 200 16 to 18-year-olds. And it was phenomenal, just them understanding that this concept exists, that you can develop it, that you can equip yourself to be inclusive leaders, that is ready for the tomorrow that is coming in front of you, where adapting and flexibility will sit at the heart of success. Because, you know, as Charles Darwin, and I shared that with them, Charles Darwin says that it's not the most intelligent or the most fittest that will survive, but the one that is most adaptable to change. And CQ sits at the heart of that adaptability to change. And once the students grasp that in order to become successful, I need to be approaching things with curiosity, that I need to hold back judgment, that I constantly need to learn and relearn, sit with the discomfort that can come with acknowledging that not everything I know is the right answer. And that's at any age, really becomes more and more difficult as we grow older. But, you know, I'd love to quote Martin Luther King Jr.'s quote here. Today, our very survival depends on our ability to stay awake, to adjust to new ideas, to remain vigilant, and to face the challenge of change.
What a way to end this conversation.
Yeah. So survival is all about facing that challenge of change, which is inevitable, around the fact that there's diversity around us, the fact that there is division around us, the fact that AI and digitalization is taking over. Yeah. And with all of that change in the offing, how are you equipping yourself as an individual, as a team, as an organization, to be effective in making the world a better place, or even if it's making your organization more profitable, whatever that might be, it's how are we equipping ourselves to do that? And I believe, this is why I founded the business on purely cultural intelligence, I believe cultural intelligence is the answer.
I think this conversation will have made lots of people really think about that. So I'm so grateful to you for joining us today, Ritika. Thank you very, very much for your time. And as always, it's an absolute joy to speak to you. I always learn from you, and I'm grateful for that. How can people find out more? How can they reach out to you?
Well, I'm very active on LinkedIn for one, but also my website, Prabhav, PrabhaaV-global.com. And, you know, in our world of digitalization, it's so easy to get a hold of anyone that you really want to. So, so absolutely, I look forward to hearing from whoever has further questions or wants further information. But thank you so much for giving me the opportunity for this beautiful conversation and sharing this space with you. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Ritika. I'll see you soon.